It is 1 o'clock. Welcome to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee. Vice Chair Myers, would you move the minutes of Wednesday, March 26, 2025? We do have a quorum.
I move the minutes for March 26, 2025.
The minutes for Wednesday, March 26, 2025 have been moved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment, the minutes are adopted. As a note to our testifiers and authors and guests, we have a full agenda. We will be extremely brief today, so I appreciate that. I know that there's some sensitive bills, but we need to continue to move. And we will start with House File. Is Representative Baker's here? He is here. Okay. Representative Baker's bill. We're going to start with Baker. People are online. What is the? Oh, he's got the A2 amendment covering up the file number. House File 854. I will move to the General Register. Representative Baker, there's an A2 amendment, and Mr. Burris, the A2 amendment encompasses the technical changes, and that's the only one that we need to move. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes. So there are a couple of technical revisions as well as a change in the name of the Memorial Highway, and that's all incorporated into the A2.
Okay, thank you. There were a couple other amendments that are not necessary because we're going to move the A2. I will move the A2 to get the bill in the manner that the author would like. All in favor of the A2 amendment? Aye. Aye. Any opposed? The A2 is adopted. Representative Baker, welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill, and I understand you have a testifier online.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much, and Chair Cagle as well. Thank you for hearing my bill. We've taken a stab at this the last couple of years, and again, I want to thank staff for helping me get this tweaked up at the last minute. Talking to Mom, we wanted to make sure we get this tweaked a little bit. We lost a very fine young man in our community here. Actually, it's coming on 18 years ago in a few weeks. Josh's impact on our community has been amazing. His family has been through a lot. Mr. Chair, again, I'm asking for a sign to be placed at no cost to the state of Minnesota. The family will be picking this up, and local folks will be fundraising for this. To that, Mr. Chair, I want to turn it over to Josh's mom, Kim Schmidt, and she's online ready to speak to this.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Online with us, we have Kim Schmidt. Please proceed with your testimony, and for the record, because this is being recorded to all the other testifiers today as well, introduce yourself by your name and if you're with any particular organization, and then proceed with your testimony, and we would seriously appreciate a very brief testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kimberly Schmidt, and the proud Gold Star mother of Sergeant Joshua Schmidt. I'm honored to have a few minutes to testify in support of House File 854, brought by Representative Dave Baker. My son was a U.S. Army sergeant. He was born in Wilmer in 1980. He went on to after graduation, went on to boot camp and became a National Guard soldier, which then he wanted more, so he became a full-time U.S. soldier, serving in Germany for 4 years. Josh was recalled. He was at the very end of his military contract and was recalled by President George W. Bush in 2005. Josh reported for duty to Fort Benning, Georgia in January of 2006 and went on to serve with a unit, the 1451st Transportation Company out of Boone, North Carolina. They then were sent to Iraq in May of 2006. My son was the truck command for the lead scout Humvee in his unit. And for almost a year, they had luck with them. They had three near misses to their Humvee. Finally, it was coming to an end, and Easter morning, Josh called and told us that he had made it. He just had one more mission to pull, and he was out of hell, as he put it. And then the following, less than a week later, we had the notification team support at Camp Ripley. My husband was also going to be deployed to Iraq within 2 weeks of Josh returning. It was Friday the 13th when the convoy rolled. Things were happening, was going wrong, so they decided to pull off road until after midnight and then get it into the 14th of April. They were an hour into their mission when they crossed over road in Fallujah. Sun had two young soldiers that they were training their positions, so both two young soldiers were there for 2 weeks, and my son looked ready to leave. They rolled over a very large IED. All members were blown out of the Humvee except for my son. He was sitting in his truck command seat to the right of the driver. My son and his battle brother and gunner for the Humvee were both killed in the incident. The Humvee was in flames and Ralph was cooking up, and horror that we were told. So my husband was notified up at Camp Ripley in one of the many lines of all the war. Governor Plenty had pulled my husband off his deployment to stay back for family support. Instead, my husband Greg flew to Dover Air Base to become our son's military escort home, which he did, and it was a sight to see, having my son and husband being lowered from a Learjet down to the ground of Wilmer, and soldiers accepting his remains. And the service that followed was held at the Wilmer Civic Center, where Greg and I spent many, many weekends sitting in the stands watching Josh play hockey on the center ice. And all of a sudden, we found ourselves sitting on center ice with over 800 people surrounding us in our community, supporting us as we went through our son's military.
Kim, yeah, Kim, thank you, Kim. I know this is hard, and I need to wrap it up, but I want to tell you just how special, and that the way the community came together to fill that Civic Center was unbelievable. So I want to thank her for her message today, Mr. Chair and members. This is a hard thing, even this many years afterwards. We had another testifier, but again, just due to time, I think we're just going to limit to this, Mr. Chair. We appreciate the thought of having this being considered for later inclusion.
Representative Baker, we're going to send this to the General Register. Oh. And that is the motion. I'll renew the motion, the House File 854, to the General Register as amended. All those in favor? Any opposed? The motion passes.
Thank you, members. And Kim, thank you so much.
Thank you to our testifiers for being here and sharing your story. We'll look forward to hearing more of that on the House floor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we will go back to Representative Whitty's House File 2554. The motion, I will move House File 2554 to the General Register. Representative Whitty, welcome to your first time at the Transportation Committee as my House seatmate. We appreciate the treats that you will bring in the future.
They will be coming from a Hy-Vee for you guys, so I do apologize.
Representative Whitty, please introduce your bill for us.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. Thank you, Chair Cagle and members. I wish legislation like this wasn't necessary, but on February 18, 2024, tragedy struck the Burnsville community, and we lost three brave first responders, Officer Paul Almstrad, Officer Matthew Ruge, and firefighter paramedic Adam Finseth. These three heroes made the ultimate sacrifice while serving and protecting the people of Burnsville. Today, we have the opportunity to ensure their legacy is never forgotten. House File 2554 designates the Burnsville Parkway Bridge over I-35 as the Almstrad Finseth Ruge Heroes Memorial Bridge. This is more than a name, it's a lasting tribute to three individuals who embodied courage, duty, and selflessness. Each time someone crosses the bridge, they will be reminded of the ultimate sacrifice these heroes made for their community. I'm truly honored to announce that this bill has received incredible bipartisan backing. All three representatives, including Representative Kayla Berg from Burnsville, have signed on to this bill. I've been able to secure private funding for the designation. What truly moves me is the unwavering support I have received from Burnsville Police Chief, Fire Chief, and Mayor. And above all, what matters most, though, is the heartfelt blessing and support I received from the families of Officer Elmstred, Officer Ruge, and Firefighter Paramedic Finseth. Their strength and sacrifice are the driving force behind the effort, and I'm deeply humbled to stand alongside them in this bipartisan important work. Committee, I ask for your support in passing this bill. Let us honor those fallen heroes in a way that ensures their bravery and service are remembered for generations to come. Thank you.
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Woody, for bringing this bill. We've talked a lot since that terrible day, and I just want to thank you for bringing this bill forward with your whole heart and for loving our shared community. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Thank you, Representative Woody. I will renew the motion to move House File 2554 to the General Register. I appreciate your work on this. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes. Thank you, Representative Woody. We will next go to House File 2660. We missed a bill in the Olson Omnibus day, so we will... 2606, this will be laid over. And there are two testifiers. We've discussed this bill in the past, so please be extremely brief in your testimony. Representative Olson, I moved your bill. Well, it doesn't, it's going to be laid over. So please introduce the bill again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2606 is a bill that would exempt fuel products, liquid fuels, from the delivery fee that we've got as a state. We've heard numerous times this session that not only is this delivery fee an inefficient way of receiving the taxes, but this one in particular with these fuels is exceptionally inefficient. It costs these businesses considerably larger amounts of money to collect the tax as it does for the money that the state is receiving. So if you look at the fiscal note, it says that they're going to receive something like $20,000 as the state in revenue. This is essentially costing these businesses between $20,000, $30,000, or $40,000 to offset that or to collect that. These businesses, when you're paying $1 in and the business is paying $2 to try and collect your $1, you got to find a better way of receiving those tax revenues. So that's the entirety of this bill. It just exempts a single industry from this delivery fee.
Thank you, Representative Olson. With us, we have Dave Wagner, Executive Director of Minnesota Propane Association. Welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Kosnick, Chair Cagle, and members, I'm Dave Wager, Executive Director of the Minnesota Propane Association. And thank you for allowing me to testify today in support of House File 2606, an exemption of delivered fuels from the retail delivery fee. We believe it was an oversight that the delivered fuels industry was included in the original legislation. Exemptions were made for specific industries. An example is utilities. Delivered fuels provide the same benefits as utilities and the energy these businesses need to operate in Minnesota. Only fuels exceeding the $100 threshold and requiring sales tax collection are subject to the fee. Sales tax is primarily a business expense compared to home heat and agricultural, which is tax exempt. So in addition to collecting sales tax in these businesses, we must also collect a delivery fee. Most of our delivery routes contain a mix of deliveries from home use to agriculture use to business use, yet only the business pays the fee while the truck uses the road for all the other deliveries. Three companies, one each in northern, central, and southern Minnesota, reported 48,417 deliveries in the first 6 months of this year. But of those deliveries, only 4.8% required the delivery fee. In our situation, there's no other option to have a product delivered. They cannot pick it up themselves. So thank you today for allowing me to testify, and thank you, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Wager? Okay, Mr. Wager, thank you. Mr. Fisher, please introduce yourself, proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Kosick and Chair Cagle, for the opportunity to testify on House File 2606. My name is Dallas Fisher from Director of Government Affairs for Fueling Minnesota. We represent 400 fuel marketers in the state. We stand in strong support of House File 2606, exempting liquid fuels from the retail delivery fee. This fee, as you know, was designed to capture revenue predominantly from big box retailers, making regular and frequent deliveries to communities all around Minnesota. It is our belief, after conversations with lawmakers of both parties, that our members' business-to-business deliveries to locations such as DOT construction sites, golf courses, or to fuel and heat buildings being subject to this fee was an unintended consequence. It's our belief that the previous exemptions in the delivery fee covered our industries, but after discussions with revenue and the MNDOT, we discovered we fell into this fee. But we thank Representative Olson for carrying this important piece of legislation for our members and stand for any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. We have Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Olson. This was not the intent of the legislation, and I have been working with DOR to kind of reiterate legislative intent and go through the statutes to make sure that if this does apply, how we can fix it. And so, you know, thank you for bringing this forward. And I am committed to making sure that the legislative intent of this fee is what happens in the future. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. I will renew the motion to lay it over. Thanks for the testimony. And House File 2606 is laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next, we have Representative Davids, House File 1774. This will also be laid over. As Representative Davids and the testifiers make their way to the testifier table, Representative Joy, you were going to you wanted to discuss an oral amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Just one second, though. Okay. You can discuss that after we introduce the bill here. Okay. Representative Davids, welcome to the Tax Committee again. It's a pleasure to have you back and another fine piece of legislation. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Chair Cagle. House File 1774 simply gets rid of the sales tax on the delivery of aggregate materials. And to get the bill in the shape we need to get it in, after working, some folks work for the department, I think Representative Joy has an amendment.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And I think your comments just says gets rid of the sales tax, gets rid of the retail delivery tax. Is that correct?
Yes. For the record, that is correct.
For the record. Okay, thank you. Representative Joy, please grace us with your knowledge on this oral amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on first page, line 1.20, after materials, we'll put a period, and then we'll delete everything all the way through 121. And that was after discussing it with the department. Chair Davids has told me, and that's what needs to be done.
I'm sorry, Representative Joy, I'm not as quick as you can say that. On line 1.20,
after materials, put a period, and then cross out everything else all the way through line 1.21. And that's what the department has discussed with Chair Davids. So.
Okay. Representative Joy, what is the effect of your oral amendment?
The effect is the department has looked at this, and they said there is no reason to have the rest of that language in there, so I would move that we accept that.
This bill is just being laid over, so we don't actually have to move the amendment.
Okay.
Mr. Burris, did you want to add any clarity to the oral amendment?
Mr. Chair, I've got the amendment identified.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Burris.
Right now.
I will entertain if members have any questions on it, Representative Cagle. Otherwise, Representative Davids, if you want to explain that, or do you want to move to your testifier?
I'd like to move to the testifier. And members, I apologize for sales tax, delivery tax. I'm just the tax chair. What would I know? So I apologize to the committee for that error.
No apologies necessary from the tax chair. Ms. Ziegler, would you like to testify and identify yourself for the record? Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Chair Cagle, members of the committee. Great to be with you this afternoon. My name is Laura Ziegler with Associated General Contractors. We're a statewide trade association. We represent both the horizontal contractors that build our transportation infrastructure as well as the vertical commercial builders. Just want to say thank you to Representative Davids for carrying this bill. We had conversations over the summer with the Department of Revenue, and we're surprised to learn that the retail delivery fee was being applied or being interpreted to apply to the delivery of aggregate materials. And so that's why we're asking for that clarity, understanding that the intent of that retail delivery fee really was not to be added on to these types of deliveries that then go in, of course, as inputs to our road construction and those infrastructure projects. So appreciate your time here today. We'll continue the conversation with the Department of Revenue on the reference to the general use sales tax portion and follow up with the committee as you pull together your proposal.
Thank you, Ms. Ziegler. Members, there is a letter in your file that I would draw your attention to if you haven't seen it already. Ms. Ziegler, my understanding is with this amendment, it's kind of materials neutral. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is my understanding, all aggregate.
Thank you, Ms. Ziegler. Is there anybody else from the public that wishes to testify? Seeing none, any member discussion? Otherwise, I will renew House File 1774 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Davids, I should let you close, shouldn't I?
No, I just want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Cagle and the members of this committee. Thank you.
I appreciate this. House File 1774 is laid over. Thank you. Next, Representative Engens, House File 1468. This will also be laid over. Welcome, Representative Engen. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Cagle. So today I'm going to be talking about House File 1468, which establishes a full-service deputy registrar's office in Circle Pines rather than a partial deputy registrar's office, which they currently have. Couple reasons as to why we want to bring this bill forward. One, it's improved access for residents. Establishing a full-service deputy registrar's office will provide a greater convenience for not only Circle Pines, but Anoka County writ large, as the closest registrar's office currently is in Blaine, which is the largest growing city in Minnesota currently. So because of those increased needs, this will definitely improve access. It's also going to address that population growth that I just referenced. There are economic benefits for Circle Pines. And it's going to reduce the strain on existing offices, of which we have 150 currently here in Minnesota. So with that, I'll turn it over to my testifier.
Thank you for your bill. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with the testimony.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sam Krieger with Hill Capital Strategies, representing our client, Circle Pines Deputy Register number 150. Representative Engen did a great job of explaining the need for this bill. It's very simple, and like you said, it just allows this existing deputy register to become a full-service register. If you go on to DPS's website, they provide a really handy map where you can type in the services you need, and they'll tell you where you can go. And if you do that, you'll notice that there's a pretty big gap between Highway 65 over in Blaine and Highway 61 that runs through White Bear Lake up through Forest Lake over near the river. So there's quite a big gap in coverage. This would be not just great for the people of Circle Pines, but for the people of Centerville and Lionel Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Krieger. The bill is being laid over. Is there any member discussion? Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Engen, is this going to be a public or private deputy registrars?
Private.
Mr. Krieger, we'll speak through the chair. No problem. Any follow-up?
You know, I've just... I'm a little leery of doing any new deputy registrars, being the fact that we have kind of a funding shortfall when it comes to them anyway. And so I've just kind of voiced my opposition to private deputy registrars because it seems to be something that's not a very good business model and that we've had to continue to supplement throughout the years. And so that's just some of my apprehensions about another private deputy registrar. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Engen, close the bill.
No, I think that this is going to increase access. It's going to increase the viability of Circle Pines and the surrounding area and make it easier for residents to go and get done what they need to get done. But thank you for those comments, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Engen. We will now lay over House File 1468. Thank you for the bill. Members, next we have Representative Robbins, House File 750. House File 750, as there is no amendment, we'll move to the General Register. Welcome back, I believe, or maybe this is your first time this session. I'm not sure.
I think I was here once before, Mr. Chair, but nice to see you all. Thank you for having me.
My testifiers. Introduce the bill for us, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So HF 750 is a bill that is filling a gap in the law, and I'm sorry, my testifier literally emailed me while I was sitting there, and he's not able to join us, so I'll quick do it all. I had a constituent whose grandmother was killed by a gentleman who was speeding at over 90 in a 45. And the driver's license was not suspended because, as it turns out in statute, right now, they only must suspend the license if there are speeding and alcohol, drugs, and intoxicating substances. And so just speed alone doesn't currently require automatic suspension of the driver's license. So my constituent was made aware of that throughout the trial and through all the problems that happened. The gentleman who killed their grandmother was literally picked up driving 88 in a 60 a month later. He continues to drive in our community. He did serve his time. So I just want you to know, like, this, I had no idea about any of this. It's a gap in the law. It's strongly supported. We had a testifier in a different committee with someone from the State Patrol who was involved in the accident. I know of no opposition to it, and I'm sorry my testifier couldn't be here to share his personal story of his grandmother. But her name, just to honor her, was Sandy Wetterland, and it made a big impact in our community. And so I encourage you to include just fixing this gap in the law.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. It's my understanding this bill was also heard in public safety earlier this session. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Passed unanimously, and it's moving in the Senate, and we have no known opposition.
Okay. Any member discussion? I will renew. Representative Tabke. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Robbins. Having heard this in public safety, I thought that this had to go back to public safety. Wasn't that the plan from there? Am I wrong in remembering how that went? But my understanding, and I just texted Chair Mueller just to see, but I thought this was supposed to go back since it had fiscal impacts on public safety. It was supposed to go back there, or is there something changed in the plan?
Well, the fiscal
Representative
note,
Robbins.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. The fiscal note came out, and I do have it with me, and there's zeros everywhere. So I don't think it had to go back, but I could be wrong.
You are not wrong. They've heard it and had it in their possession. I believe there was a discussion with their bill, so we're directed to send it to the General Register. Any other follow-up? I will renew House File 750 to the General Register. All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Robbins. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Next, we have Representative Anderson. Then we'll have Representative Schwartz and the Representative Cagle, Representative Fogelman. Representative Anderson, I will move House File 2234 to the Elections, Finance, and Government Operations. There is an A1 amendment that we will need to adopt to get the bill in the author's preference. And it's more of a kind of a technical clarifying amendment. So I will move the A1 amendment for you, even though you are a member of the committee. All those in favor of the A1 to adopt it in the motion and the manner that the amendment or the author wants. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Anderson, thank you for carrying this bill. Please introduce it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2234 essentially modifies the available uses of funds for Twin Cities Metro counties from the Transportation Advancement Account and the Regional Transportation Sales Tax. The changes that it makes is it sets a minimum of 58.5% for transportation system repair and roadway replacement, and it merges and it sets a maximum of 41.5% for the remaining uses, which include active transportation, corridor safety studies, and transit. The purpose of the bill is to provide more flexibility for our counties. In their transportation infrastructure, and also to help provide dollars for our counties to maintain the roads. As we know, there's a huge shortage, MnDOT has talked about that, of dollars to do maintenance, and this will help alleviate that potentially. That's the county's choice how they spend these funds, and I think that that's a good thing. We need to, as a legislature, try to encourage us to do more, give our counties more choices than we can. I also want to point out, I was in taxes earlier today, and the counties were there, and they were talking about all of the, we were looking at the governor's budget, and they were talking about all the different shifts that the governor's budget proposes onto counties. And it's a huge dollar amount that is being shifted, should that pass, onto counties. Representative Joy was talking earlier, and I think Clay County, 18% tax increase next year is what they're looking at simply because of the mandates and shifts that are being proposed in this legislature. So we need to do something to help, and this is a way that we can help. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no testifiers, public signed up. Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing this bill. You know, one of the things that I just heard you talk about was, you know, kind of honoring the will of the county, and I just, you know, want to lift up the letter that is in the packet from the county that I represent, Hennepin County, you know, that expresses some deep concerns about this bill. You know, I will say that one of the things that I hear most often from my residents about is traffic safety, you know, and specifically safety for pedestrians and people that are biking, people that are not in cars. You know, coming out of the pandemic, we know that people are speeding more than ever before, that we have just a lot of things happening on our roadways that should not. And so, you know, when I have looked into this issue, you know, one of the things that I've found is that the way that our streets are have been designed is just really not helping with pedestrian safety. You know, I can think in where I live in Minneapolis, I live kind of right at the intersection of Lake Street and Cedar Avenue, Highway 55. Yeah. Those are streets that people, speed on all the time, right? And so, you know, I could be going on a walk with my kid, with my baby. That's my pedestrian street, right? But people are not driving on it that way. So, you know, I really think we did good work last session around putting these dollars towards trying to, you know, ensure that we have roadways that are safe for everyone. And so, you know, I'm a no for this bill today, and want to make it really clear to my constituents who are really asking me to do something about traffic safety and pedestrian safety that that I cannot support this. So, Mr. Chair, I would like to ask for a roll call of this bill.
A roll call has been requested. We'll take a roll call. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I share a lot of Representative Sensenmura's concerns. We did a lot of really good work last year, and I don't really want to see a lot of that stuff undone. And so I would ask my members to oppose this.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson. You know, a consistent theme that I hear and that I try to stick with is, you know, that flexibility. If it's flexibility with funding our schools, if it's flexibility in funding transportation, I just want to say thank you for bringing this forward. This bill is giving our counties that opportunity for more flexibility. My county of Hennepin County versus Ramsey, given the counties around the state, I think they're looking for this type of flexibility, and so I want to thank you for bringing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Representative Anderson, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Counties can still use 41.5% of the dollars for transit, if that's a choice. That's a lot of money for transit and for sidewalks and everything else. But I think we have to give flexibility. We have to trust our counties that they're going to do and build transportation infrastructure to the best, that makes the most sense for their county. Hennepin County is not the same as Washington County, where I live. So they're all different, and we need to let them. They're the experts. They're elected to serve their constituents. We need to let them make the choice. So thank you. I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. I will amend my motion to lay the bill over. All those in favor? Or actually, we don't even need to we don't need to take a vote on that. Thank you, Representative Anderson. House File 2234 is laid over. Thanks. Next, House File 2665, Representative Schwartz. Welcome, Representative Schwartz, to the Transportation Committee. I will move House File 2665 will be laid over. There is an A1 amendment. I will move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the author's desired state. All those in favor of the A1 motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. That amendment is adopted. Representative Schwartz, can you introduce the bill and speak to the A1 as well? Thank you.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. I am proposing that Minnesota Statute 169-865 would result in adding crude soybean oil to the list of qualifying products, including under the Specialty Farm Product Permit Statute. This proposal could benefit Minnesota soybean growers by investing in the soybean industry and soybean markets. Many parties are aware of the proposal and most seem to be neutral or open to the adjustment. MnDOT is neutral on the proposal. With the addition of crude, State Patrol is neutral on the proposal. County engineers are neutral on the proposal. We will work with Martin County Engineer and County Commissioners on a preferred route pending approval of the proposal. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to my testifier.
Thank you, Representative Schwartz. With us, we have Mr. Hamlin. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair Kosnick, Chair Cagle, members of the committee. My name is Jake Hamlin, Director of State Government Affairs for CHS. Appreciate the opportunity to testify on House File 2665. I do want to reference, we also have a support letter from the Minnesota Soybean Growers. I'm not sure if members have that.
That letter is in the members' packets. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Kosnick. So in 2024, CHS invested $60 million to expand soybean processing capacity at the Mankato Soybean Refinery. And this investment was made due to increasing demand for food-grade products. And so what this bill will enable us to do then is to move product more efficiently with fewer trucks from Fairmont to Mankato. So from Fairmont, where the crude soybean oil is processed, and then to Mankato, where the unrefined oil then is further processed to make food-grade oil that ultimately goes into dressing, sauces, and oils for food customers. So by passing this then, as Representative Schwartz had mentioned, it just adds crude soybean oil to the list of qualifying products. Mm-hmm. And we see this as an opportunity then to actually reduce the number of trucks on a key transportation corridor in the area. So we feel that this opportunity does strengthen soybean production, soybean processing, and to benefit the soybean industry throughout the state of Minnesota. I do want to just reference too, you may hear a couple concerns as it relates to the mode of transportation that we're using, as well as impact on highways. From a CHS perspective, we are supportive of all modes of transportation. That is utmost foundation to be able to move product from farm to domestic and international markets. And then ultimately, we need to maintain that infrastructure not only for the farm sector, but all of our economic sectors for the state. So fully supportive of balancing those interests as well. With that, Chair Kosnick, Chair Cagle, and members, appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Hamlin. We do have two testifiers signed up. Ms. Hannah Alstead, and then Ms. Backus as well.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you.
Proceed.
Thank you, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Hannah Alstead. I'm the political director for the Teamsters Joint Council 32 and represent 80,000 members across the region, and a very large percentage of them drive trucks every day. The Teamsters are opposed to House File 2665 because nothing is more important to us than the safety of the truck drivers who are we're sharing the roads with. That's why we have consistently opposed special truck weight car routes like what we see today. We know that heavier trucks on Minnesota roads pose a safety threat to those driving them and to all of us who drive next to them. Simply put, these types of proposals threaten safety, increase wear and tear on our roads, and add unnecessary operational difficulties for drivers. Every year, we see industry come forward asking for heavier trucks for an increasingly expanding list of products. What comes next after soybean oil? This is about safety and ensuring as safe a workplace for our driving members on the highways as anyone working on a factory floor. We strongly urge you not to support House File 2665, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Ms. Backus. Welcome to the committee. You know the drill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amber Backus with United Strategies, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, which is an association of the four Class 1 railroads and 14 regional and short lines that operate across the state. To put things in perspective, in 2022, it would have taken 12.6 million trucks on Minnesota's highways to handle the freight moved by rail. And our industry remains the most fuel-efficient way to move this number of products, transporting one ton of freight nearly 500 miles on a gallon of fuel. And we appreciate the opportunity to comment today. We understand that the proponents are seeking a statutory change to address a specific issue in their supply chain, but the bill before you has much broader implications for our industry, and I do have to admit it's a little weird because CHS has been an incredible partner of the railroads, but we do think this has broader implications. Minnesota's railroads have consistently opposed exemptions that permit larger and heavier trucks on our state's roadways. Each time the legislature approves a truck weight exemption, it sets a precedent for future requests. This is evident by the section of statute being amended in the bill. What began in 2008 as a weight exemption limited to raw or unfinished agricultural products has now expanded to cover an extensive list of agricultural products and inputs. Allowing heavier trucks changes the economics of freight movement, advantaging our primary competitor, the trucking industry. The Railroad Association will always voice concerns when the state makes decisions that affect our economic interests and competition between industries. Taken one by one, the exemptions may seem innocuous, but added together, they fundamentally shift how the transportation market works in Minnesota, and we don't believe that government should be in the business of picking winners and losers. Additionally, if the legislature is insistent on providing exemptions, we'd ask that a more thorough review of the impacts on highway safety and infrastructure be conducted. Because they are privately owned, railroads make significant investments in maintaining and upgrading their track, upwards of $23 billion annually. While the trucking industry pays into the state's highway fund, consideration should be given to whether their contributions reflect their wear and tear on the roads. According to the most recent federal study on the topic, a 97,000-pound truck, as permitted under this bill, only pays for 50% of the damage it would cause to roads and bridges. So I want to thank you for your time and appreciate your consideration of our testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Backus. I don't know that there's any other public testimony. Any member questions? Ms. Backus, actually, I did, or maybe Mr. Hamlin. It was my understanding that this exemption in statute was kind of a direct route from to the processing plant. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
The existing statute?
Mr. Hamlin. The purpose of the intent of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for an exemption mostly to get to the processing site.
Chair
Kosnick,
Chair Cagle, members of the committee. So what we're looking for is it is from facility to facility.
And is there a rail option to get there?
So in the 50-mile segment between Fairmont to Mankato, there is no viable rail option.
Okay.
Direct option.
Ms. Backus, did you have a comment?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. The bill does not limit the movement to this corridor, so it could be any roads across the state. There are other exemptions in statute that actually name the routes being used. This bill doesn't. And I apologize. I do have a different opinion about whether rail is a viable option. There is available line that is active
recording
between Fairmont and Mankato, and I know both facilities have access to it.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no other member questions, I guess I would just comment that maybe, you know, there's some middle ground or, you know, if we can get to some agreement, that would be helpful to the committee. Representative Schwartz, do you want to close your bill?
Yes, thank you. Chair and committee members. This proposal benefits soybean growers by investing in soybean industry and soybean markets. By adding the crude soybean oil to the list of the special product permit for the 53-mile route from Fairmont to Mankato and through Blue Earth Mart in Wanawan counties, we will work with the county commissioners and the Martin County engineer on pending approval of this proposal. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Representative Schwartz. House File 2665 is laid over as amended. Next, let's go to Representative Fogelman's bill, and then we can have more discussion on the other bill. Representative Fogelman, I will move House File 2798 to be laid over. And the testifiers, if you want to make your way towards the testifier table, that would be great. Representative Fogelman, please introduce your bill. And then we have testifiers Mark Bruner, Cal Clare, and maybe Mr. LeBeau. I'm not certain. But please introduce your bill, and then we'll go to your testifiers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick and committee members. I have before us House File 2798. This bill addresses the issues that Minnesota is kind of an island when it comes to pilot escort requirements. We need to cut some additional costs that hurt our families from having their dream of home ownership. It also hurts commerce from moving in our state with this additional cost. The bill that I have before us is a result of talks with Minnesota Department of Transportation, the Highway Patrol, and manufactured home plant operators. So hopefully if there's a lot of questions, Minnesota Department of Transportation can help with some of the questions, but I am going to turn this over to my testifiers to give you more explanation.
Thank you, Representative Fogelman. And members, I think this bill has been introduced in previous sessions, but hasn't had the opportunity to get some discussion. So I appreciate bringing the bill forward. Mr. Bruner, do you want to go first?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please introduce yourself for the committee and the record and proceed.
Mark Bruner, Manufactured Modular Home Association of Minnesota. Thank you, Representative Fogelman, for bringing the bill. It's important. We represent the manufactured modular home builders in Minnesota plants. There are about 15 plants that build homes in the state. About half of what we build are exported to surrounding states. And briefly, it wasn't until about a year ago that the issue we're having this discussion on did not exist. While the current law in 169.812 allows the Commissioner of Transportation to require additional escorts when they're deemed necessary. In practice, what's happening is our members, member plants are being told when there's not a permit or a escort required on the permit that they do in fact need a police escort. So there's been some confusion relative to the commissioner at DOT prescribing that there's not an escort needed, and then being told by DPS in the field that an escort is being needed. So in a sense, we're looking for clarity on what should go on the permit so that we don't have this happening out in the field. But aside from that, Minnesota is unique in that this requirement actually hurts affordability. We're currently the only state in the Midwest that requires licensed peace officer escorts to transport manufactured modular homes briefly across the center line or on rural or undivided roads. In my handout, hopefully you have in your packet, sort of emphasizes this, showing the state of Minnesota sort of being this island in requiring the police escorts. Again, with half of our homes being exported to other states, it gives you know, a competitive disadvantage for the prices of our homes being sold in other states. So, you know, we're really trying to bring Minnesota more into line with surrounding states. But let me just put into perspective the significance of the cost. We're looking at adding $1,500 to $3,000 per home for the cost of a police escort. And, you know, the average cost of a new single-wide manufactured home, maybe a 1,000-square-foot home, is about $85,000. A multi-section manufactured home, about $150,000. So the added cost we're looking at for to our homes is about 3.5% of a single-sectional manufactured home. And we're looking at, you know, maybe $20-$25 per month more in financing, essentially enough to disqualify a buyer from FHA, USDA loans under the typical debt-to-income limits. For families earning under $50,000, which includes more than half of manufactured housing buyers, this cost alone can push them out of qualifying for financing into a lesser or older home or out of the housing market altogether. So we, you know, the bill essentially removes a lot of the ambiguity we're currently dealing with, and is a big, huge step forward in terms of pricing and keeping us competitive with other states where we ship our homes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bruner. And it might be a little known fact to the committee that I had a college internship at a mobile home manufactured home dealership, so I'm familiar with the product, and I think it is an important piece of our affordable housing solution as we move forward. We have Representative, we'll go to the next testifier then to member questions, Representative Anderson. Cale Blair, please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Cale Blair. I'm the sales manager at Clayton Homes, Schultz Homes. I've been there for about 9 years, and just recently, in about a year and a half, is the first time we had a presence with peace officers as far as escorting our homes. So it's very, very new to us. So thanks for the opportunity for me to speak today. Clayton Homes, we're a manufacturing company. We build factory homes built out of Minnesota. I want to briefly address two significant challenges in the current regulatory framework that impact both our operations and affordability of housing in Minnesotans. First, there's a lack of clarity around when an escort driver is required. This is inconsistencies creates operational uncertainties for the transporters, even when they are following approved permitted routes. Requirements often vary by jurisdiction, and enforcement can be unpredictable, adding available risk and cost to the process. Second, the cost of escorts and the additional added escorts, often between $1,500 and $3,000, is ultimately passed on to the consumer. For many families, additional costs can be put home ownership out of reach or force them to settle for a smaller or less suitable home. In today's housing climate, that's a barrier we simply cannot afford to ignore. It's also worth noting that Clayton Homes operates in all 48 contiguous states, and Minnesota requirements for both a private escort and police escort is unique to the Midwest. Across the country, private escorts operate successfully without the involvement of law enforcement. Requiring both is duplicating escorts, it's expensive, and regulatory overreaches that adds a significant cost without the clear public safety benefit. This is a bill to support the clarity for all parties when peace officers are needed. This bill does not eliminate escorts. It keeps all the same permitting, dimensional checks, and safety protocols in play. In rare high-risk situations, law enforcement can and will be involved, but it ends the gray areas in the statute on when and when not peace officers are required. We support this bill's effort to bring clarity and consistency to escort requirements. It's a meaningful step that will help manufacturers, transporters, and most importantly, Minnesotan families in need of affordable housing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blair. There are members, there are a couple letters of concern and support in the packet. I think it's appropriate to have ideas brought to us that need to be vetted out and thought out. That's what the committee does. Is there any other testifiers? I know, see, I'm looking at the state troopers in there, the department. No other public testimony. Representative Anderson?
Thank you. Thank you for bringing this bill. I've read the State Patrol letter. I understand their, you know, their concern. I get that. But we have some other public purposes that we need to talk about. We spent a lot of time over since I've been in the legislature the last couple of years talking about affordable housing and ways to get costs down. I think a lot of the problem is in the regulatory environment, and this is a perfect example of that, where if we're adding $1,500 to $2,000 for really, you know, is it really needed for that? We're adding those kind of dollars. That's a lot of money. That's, you know, that's several percent, 2%. That's a down payment for a lot of folks. And I think everything that we can do to deal with regulatory issues like this that really aren't worth the $2,000 in my mind, spending that money, that's a good thing, and that will help housing become more affordable in Minnesota. We also have a peace officer problem. We have spent a lot of money trying to get more peace officers across the state of Minnesota, and there are better things, frankly, for them to be doing than this. This can be done privately, and, you know, so I support this bill. I think it's an excellent bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. And I think your point about affordable housing is important. In the realm of this committee, we're talking about, you know, making sure that we're safe or not when we're doing that. But Mr. Bruner, I guess that leads me to a question. You want clarity on the permits of whether it requires an official law enforcement escort. Otherwise, there are other escorts that generally help transport these homes. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct. The clarity would be very helpful. And there are certified pilot escorts in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota is, you know, one of maybe a dozen states that certifies these escort drivers. They're professional drivers who essentially can perform, you know, the duties of a peace officer when needed. The Department of Public Safety does the administration of that certification program. Our association offered some of the first training programs where we had state troopers do the training and certification. So, yes, there are there are certified pilot escort drivers available to, and more readily so, in a timely manner to provide that service. Thank you.
Thank you for clarifying that. Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative, for bringing the bill forward. You know, I look at the Minnesota State Patrol information, and I just see a lot of red flags with the safety concerns with that are being voiced here from the experts and what our police are saying. And I'm curious if within here, I was looking to see, I know that it says in here that we're the only state in the Midwest that requires this. I think that's if I have that correctly. But I'm just curious if there's been any discussion about the, I noticed the line in here that we've had an increase in fatalities with moving larger homes, or moving homes through our transportation system. And so is there any research on any of the other states and, like, what they're seeing with what that looks like?
Mr. Bruner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no. You know, specific research, I'm not sure my members who do business in other states, you know, tell me that they're not having concerns. No other states are taking actions to, you know, bring them more in line with what Minnesota currently has relative to the incidents in Minnesota. I'm aware of one, you know, obviously the State Patrol could certainly expand on this. I think maybe a year or two ago it involved a modular home where someone pulled out and passed the home and it was a head-on collision that was determined to have been a suicide. And in that case, the driver of the towing the modular home was not at fault in that case. So that's the one incident I'm aware of, the past 18 months, 2 years in Minnesota.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Yeah, I think that's got to be part of the conversation, especially if we're hearing from our State Patrol that they're concerned, that there's a reason for that concern. I tend to believe our police when they let us know that. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Green. Representative Cagle, Kraft, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fogelman. My question is, so I'm hearing that we're the only state in the Midwest that does it, but it appears there are many other states in the country that have this kind of requirement, correct?
Mr. Chair.
I think that's been answered. You feel free to answer the question, but do you want to just get to the follow-up too?
I'll keep going. So you say that this adds $1,500 to $3,000. And you say the alternative is these other approaches. That you're not saying they shouldn't be unescorted, that they still should be escorted, but these other approaches cost less. So if you could explain that, and then I'll just ask the other question as well. If what you're saying is you need clarity and we have this situation where we don't have enough peace officers, why are the police so strongly against this as I'm reading it? Like, why haven't you been able to come to a compromise position on this?
Yep. So, Chair. Good question, Representative Kraft. I would say in the past we haven't been able to get a hearing on this issue, so I appreciate the question. If you want to restate it, or do you remember the question? The question is about other escort opportunities that are not official law enforcement, is that right, Representative Kraft?
Yeah, so there are two questions. One is you're not proposing to not have an escort, just a different escort. And so I guess that those different escort approaches cost less than our hiring a police officer to do it. So if you could explain that. And then my second question was, given what you're saying, clarity, like why haven't you been able to come to some kind of compromise or agreement with the police officers? Because it seems like they're pretty strongly against this for safety reasons.
So Mr. Bruner.
Mr. Chair, Representative. Well, cost-wise, there can be a difference. Availability, the escorts we're talking about using are called certified pilot escort drivers. Minnesota adopted this, I think, about 2012. That in lieu of peace officers, you could use certified pilot escort drivers, and they are trained by the state. They're more readily available than peace officers. And we actually, Senator Dames last year held a meeting that I attended with then Colonel Matt Langer of the State Patrol on this issue about availability of troopers, and he told Senator Dames and those of us on the call that, yes, there's a shortage and that, certainly there are other more, significant things going on that could utilize their time as well. So, and we've worked with the department on this. They toured a plant a few months ago in Redwood Falls, and relative to why we can't come to an agreement, I'm not sure. Everybody seems to think we're on the same page, and so our hope is that by just codifying something in statute relative to what's on the permit is what prevails, not an interpretation in the field that a police escort is necessary would go a long ways.
Follow up, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would just say, on something like this where we're seeing the safety concerns brought out, that it would be, I would recommend coming to the committee with something that they, oddly better, that they would approve, because you're asking us to step in the middle of this when one group is saying it's going to be significant safety issues. So it's a tough thing to get to.
That's good advice.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. You want to take a look at this? My understanding, Representative Kraft, is that it's not clear on the permits when they pull a permit whether they have a law enforcement escort or plan to have a private escort if an official law enforcement escort is needed. So this is my, I believe the intent of the bill is to, when you pull the permit, say, if you're going to need a sheriff or somebody, then say it on the permit so that the business knows what, what's required of them instead of going down the road and finding out differently. And so if that's true, or feel free to correct me, is that if that's accurate, so that's why we're having the discussion. And you're welcome to follow up. We've got a little bit of time, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My point is, though, that if that's the case and this is a clarification and we're clarifying something that all should understand and is for the benefit of all, then I don't understand why the police are so against it. So, like, there's just this gap here.
No. That's well, Representative Kraft, I think that's a fair question, and that is why the bill is being laid over instead of being moved. And I hope that through the discussion here, it enables parties to kind of come together and find some better clarity. So sometimes we do that at the legislature. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Fogelman, for bringing this bill forward here. I'm having a hard time connecting the arguments made by the State Patrol as to how a licensed peace officer escort alerts drivers to the oncoming risk at a rate that exceeds that of another escort car that would be required in this case anyways. The thing is that when I see a police officer's vehicle with their lights going, I don't think there's an oversized, overdimensional vehicle coming my way. I think there's an emergency. I think there is something other than an oversized vehicle coming to that needs my notice, I need to be aware of. When I see red and blue lights, I don't think oversized vehicle. When I see yellow lights flashing, I think, oh, they're alerting me to the presence of something. When I see that really big staff in the air checking to make sure that it can fit under the bridges, I know there's a big vehicle coming in my way. And when I see a sign that says oversized vehicle, escort car, then I think to myself, oh, there's an oversized vehicle. When I see a police officer's car, when I see a state patrol car, I do not have any of those thoughts in my mind. I am not made aware of the fact that there is a large implement, there's a large thing coming my way down the road. And so I'm really questioning, and maybe the state patrol wants to answer that. How is this actually notifying individuals that there is actually an oversized vehicle? Because the way I'm seeing this, we've got the police officer, we've got the peace officer's vehicle, red and blue lights flashing, telling me, oh no, there's some hazard coming, I don't know what it is. And then I see an escort vehicle, and I'm like, there's not only an emergency, but there's an escort vehicle. So now we've got a big oversized vehicle and an emergency. Now I have to deal with two things. In fact, I'm actually only dealing with one thing, and that thing is that there's an oversized vehicle coming. I think that this is totally contradictory, and if we can save $3,000 on it, I think that this is just a slam dunk home run, and I'm questioning why in the world we need to notify people of an emergency and an oversized vehicle when there is no emergency, there is in fact only an oversized vehicle. So maybe that's just me pontificating. Maybe the department, maybe the state troopers want to come up and explain further how that actually alerts me to something other than emergency. But from where I'm standing, I'm seeing an emergency and an oversized vehicle when we only have an oversized vehicle.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Your pontificating has drawn testifiers to the testifier table. So if that was your intent, good job. Sir, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and share your thoughts if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, representatives. Captain Robert Zach with the State Patrol Commercial Vehicle Section. And to answer your question, sir, the law enforcement escort is in addition to some of those other mechanisms that you talk about. It's not the sole purpose of that escort move to have a law enforcement vehicle. It's not the only vehicle. So you're going to have those vehicles that have the pole warning people the oversized load dimension labeling on there too. But one of the advantages of having a law enforcement escort along with that is they'll check the permit ahead of time, make sure it's the right vehicle, make sure the driver has the right qualifications, and to make sure that's the right load dimension to meet the requirements of that particular permit and that route. So that's part of what the role of the law enforcement officer is involved in. And one of the things that you can't count in these equations is that the crashes that are prevented by having a licensed peace officer involved in those escorts. We don't have any data on that, but it is an advantage to have law enforcement there on scene when they're required to help control intersections, things that are unknown to happen along the route. So they're an auxiliary additional tool for those escorts.
Thank you. Could you restate your name for the record, please?
Sure. Sorry, Mr. Chair. Captain Robert Zack.
Robert Zack?
Z-A-K.
Z-A-K. Thank you. Representative Olson, do you have follow-up question?
Well, I appreciate that. With that being said, if you're saying that you're augmenting or you're an auxiliary to all these other escort vehicles, I still first don't see the police officer as an individual who's telling me there's an oversized load. And I don't know, I understand the concept for like a slow-moving funeral procession to have a police escort. I understand that. But when we're talking about utilizing assets in a way that is responsible, wise, and takes care of taxpayer dollars, I don't know. I don't even know if what, and yeah, it's unquantifiable. Maybe the fact that you were there when an accident actually happened one out of 10,000 times that a vehicle is, an oversized vehicle is moved, maybe that's worth taxpayer dollars to have you there immediately on the scene. I don't know if that is. But at the same time, I'm not really buying this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Olson. I didn't catch your title either, Mr. Zack, Trooper Zack.
Mr. Chair, Captain.
Captain. Captain, I appreciate your testimony, and I don't think that people are trying to move their product without in an unsafe manner without an escort. I think the question is, why can't, when the permit is being pulled, you jump in and clarify if an actual law enforcement escort is needed or a private escort is needed at that time? Why can't you put that on the permit? Isn't that what the bill does or request?
Mr. Chair, what we're trying to do is work collaboratively with both Department of Transportation and the modular home industry to find a solution that would clarify this issue. And I think that we can come up with some type of a solution together that solves this issue of when one is required and when one isn't required. And that's why we think further discussion would be helpful.
Well, Captain Zack, I appreciate that comment and the attitude of trying to work together. That's part of the reason why we have bills in committee. So thank you for that comment, and we will go next to Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. And Captain, I have a question for you as well. Having worked extensively with troopers and things, I know that there's a lot of training that goes into this specific action. Can you just talk about that training that happens to make sure that this is successful and the troopers are making sure everybody gets from point A to point B safely in Minnesota?
Thank you, Representative Tapke. And if you wouldn't mind comments on the training for, obviously, law enforcement is well-trained, but also the training on a private escort company. Is that appropriate?
I'm just asking about the troopers.
Okay. If you could talk about the trooper training, but then also the certification of a private escort, too. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. For the escort training that the troopers go through, it's a process that extends their basic training to understand what the requirements are going to be for an oversized dimensional load of how to move it safely through traffic, how to get through intersections, how to interpret and understand and read the permits that are getting selected, how to look at driver's requirements for that particular load. As far as the private industry goes, I'm not aware at this time what those requirements are. I'd have to do some research on that and find out.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bruner. You look like you might have some insight on the difference of a private escort. And private escorts are required all the time, or when is either escort required?
15 feet or less, there's not an escort required. It's when it goes beyond that. And then that would be determined by the department when issuing the permit based on the route and, you know, the geometry of the road and that kind of thing. And, you know, to your second question on the training, my understanding is that the certified pilot escorts. I guess we don't really call them civilian escorts because that's, you know, more somebody with a pickup truck and a flag, that, you know, kind of thing. And this is far beyond that. These are certified by the state. My understanding is that all the troopers that are doing serving as police escorts are also certified pilot escorts. So essentially, they all receive the same training. So that's helpful.
That is helpful, and a pilot escort might be the best term to be using here. Representative Tapke, did you have a follow-up? We will wrap this up. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Fogelman. I like your bill. You know, I have a question to ask at the end, but, you know, the liability for problems that exist a lot of times end up with the mover itself. And I just liken it. I'm a 33-year CDL driver. Just over the years, there's been constantly these little roadblocks that put in the way of having a CDL license, and it's added a lot of cost for the industry. And at the end of the day, as a CDL driver or the person that's driving and responsible for the safety of others and your cargo that you're moving, is up to the person, the one that's most liable, and the one that's liable is the one that is has that business. And so my question for you is, this really looking for a solution to a problem that really doesn't exist? I want to know from you, you mentioned that there was one episode that you're familiar with, and I want to know, first of all, if that was an escorted with law enforcement, or if that was escorted with a conventional a certified service. And then my follow-up with that would be just whether or not other states around us have a record that's different.
Captain Zach.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. I don't know of any instances where there's been issues that we haven't been able to assist with these movements. I've asked for examples when we were not available. I know we met in December out at the Modular Home Association down in Redwood Falls with Carlson and Schultz Holmes, I believe, to try to find some solutions to this. But we were told that, you know, law enforcement was intervening and trying to stop some of these movements, or they're getting stopped by civilian inspectors and being held in place until a trooper can come on and do an inspection. But to this date, I don't have any information backing that up. And we, like I said, we want to be part of the solution to create a viable option moving forward.
Thank you, Captain Zach. I appreciate that. Did you have another follow-up, Representative Murphy,
Short
closing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you give me an idea if the certified pilots, have they shown that they're less safe?
Captain Zach?
Representative, I don't have any data on that.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Murphy, and we'll continue to have some discussion and encourage the parties and stakeholders to continue to engage in discussion. I appreciate your willingness to make some comments. Representative Fogelman, do you have any closing comments?
Well, I appreciate, thank you, Chair. I appreciate everyone's questions, and we hope that this affects actually a business in my district as well as other districts around the state. But we want to make housing affordable. We've heard that over and over and over and over again. So let's continue to work with everyone and get something that is clear and concise for all the parties involved. It would be great, and thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fogelman, for bringing us House File 2798. And members, I appreciate the discussion today and on this bill and a couple of the other ones. It's a good reminder that we don't just use our road and transportation system to get from, you know, get to work in this or that. There's actual commercial value to our infrastructure, and that's why we are working hard to continue to maintain our infrastructure, keep it in a safe manner so that we can not just get to point A to point B, but we can also have a viable, strong economy that is tied to a strong transportation system. So House File 2798 is laid over, and then we will, thank you very much, we will move to Representative Cagle's bill on House File 1521 that will be laid over as well. Chair Cagle, we're just going to move your bill over here, if you want to introduce it. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1520 is a, I won't
1521.
Even pretend. What was that? Or 1521, I'm sorry. Is a bill about the asset sustainability ratio, which I will not pretend to know how that is calculated or what it is, but I know that it is reported, and then it's really just about making sure that we're maintaining our existing investments for sustainable infrastructure. It will also ensure minimum investment levels, sustainable and predictable and reasonable investments, so that we can really just work to preserve our current assets and use paper preservation techniques, and also save money in the long run. Because if we can make sure that our roads are up to standards, then we won't have to be fixing them later. So I will turn it over to my testifiers, because I'm sure they can explain it way better than I can.
Yeah, thank you for carrying this bill, Chair Cagle. It's a new topic to me as well. So not sure which testifier. We've got a couple that are here. I'm guessing you're Mr. Engstrom.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the committee. You've seen it done here earlier. Just introduce yourself for the record, the audio and video record, and then tell us about the bill and your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Cagle. My name is Glenn Engstrom, and I am currently the Director of Engineering Research Technology Transfer and Technology Transfer at the Aggregate Ready Mix Association, Minnesota. Before that, 30 years with MnDOT. And I'd like to start off by saying this is obviously a difficult subject. MnDOT is pushed left and right which way to spend their money, how to spend their money. I retired from MnDOT 2.5 years ago. And before that, I was the Director of Materials and Road Research there. And about 9-10 years ago, my boss at the time, Assistant Commissioner, came to me and said, Glenn, I need to know how much it's going to cost to keep our pavements in condition every year. Sounds like an easy question to answer. It's very difficult. So we did a lot of searching. We looked for, you always want, as an engineer, we always want data. We always want measures. So we looked around and we found this one measure, and we found several other ones too, but this asset sustainability ratio is used by several states, including Washington State was the main state that was using it. And basically what it does, it tries to look at, are you keeping up with normal deterioration? So if you're keeping up, you're basically putting in as much as you lose each year. So every year, we all get a year older, and so are our roads. So are we putting in as much as we're losing each year? So a ratio of 1 means we're keeping up. Anything less than 1 means we're not keeping up. And again, my boss at the time, he's juggling all the modes, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, rail, air. ADA is a big deal, expansion project, safety, bridge, and pavements. Pavements is the big girl in the room at MnDOT, usually around, a third of the budget is spent on pavements, so it's a big deal. We feel that this bill will allow MnDOT to have that measure to keep up with normal deterioration. But beyond that, we believe the targets are going to ensure stable and minimum investment levels, sustainable, predictable, and reasonable investment. And one thing I really like to hit on, and I know the people behind me will say the same thing, this is really going to encourage innovation. MnDOT does a lot of wonderful things when it comes to research. I think most of you are aware of the Mineral Project that I was involved with for 25, 30 years. A lot of good stuff coming out of that that I believe they could use even more of that in the future. A couple other things. We also think it will reinforce the use of best practices. There's a lot of things that other states do, and we need to build on that. The other thing that I think is really, really important is we need to encourage pavement preservation techniques. So those are the techniques, once you build a road, you're going to go out there, you're going to crack seal it, you're going to chip seal it, you're going to do some, we call it concrete pavement repair, to extend the life of the pavement. It's a cheap fix, but it'll extend it long into the future. And frankly, that is something that, again, in my role at MnDOT about 3 years ago, we set guidelines for pavement preservation, and frankly, they weren't being met. They fell, you know, money is tough to come by, and it just fell by the wayside. So we think it would do that. The other thing, we think it'll prevent siphoning off the pavement funds for other projects. You named the project. When you got the payments being a third of the budget, that's the gorilla in the room, and that's where you go to get additional money if you need it for a variety of projects. I think most of you know, used to kid around at MnDOT, if you didn't say the word Blatnick, it wasn't an official meeting. So, I mean, that's a huge project. It's a big need, but it needs to be done. And finally, I'd like to say that the targets in the legislation that are listed, I think we've got 6.65 for 27, 0.75, and then 0.85. Those were all taken out of, I think most of you are familiar with the 10-year program. It's called the CHIP. Those were all taken out of the CHIP that was done in 22. So at the time, that was MnDOT's intention to spend at that level for those. Unfortunately, as things get closer and in the four-year program, the STIP priorities can change. You know, we have inflation, things like that. So with that, I think this will really help MnDOT in the long run. There may be some short-term pain, but I really think it'll help MnDOT in the long run. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions, or we have two other people that would be interested in. The one thing I would like to say before I close is, we have both industries here, both concrete and asphalt. How many times do you see both concrete and asphalt agree on one thing? So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Mr. Angstrom, thank you so much for enlightening us and educating us on that. I seem pretty favorable to this myself, so I appreciate that. Thank you for your work at MnDOT. They do a number. You think about the system that we have and everything that is involved, we're blessed that we do have a significant funds that come into it, but we're still falling behind on maintaining our roads. I'm encouraged of bills like this that help us to better maintain our roads. And so thank you for that testimony. I'm not sure who's next to you, Chair Cagle. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. We do have about 15, 20 minutes. And so we'd like a couple other testifiers and then some member discussion.
All right. Thank you. Chairs Cagle, Kosnick, and committee members. My name is Brandon Braver. I am a registered professional engineer in Minnesota. I serve as the technical director for the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association, where I work with road contractors, local governments, agency partners, to support high-quality, long-lasting, smooth asphalt roads for taxpayers. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm here today to voice strong support for this bill. I know Glenn went into a lot of good details on why we need to preserve and protect a lot of this pavement investment for Minnesotans. And at the core of this bill, it's really about ensuring Minnesotans have safe, smooth, reliable way to get to work, school, and everywhere in between. It's about smart planning, efficient use of tax dollars, and making good on our commitment to preserve our infrastructure. Speaking of preservation, a really good example, and there's a lot of good work happening on the research end. One example is at Minn Road, and a partnership with the National Center for Asphalt Technology. Actually, in 2016, there was a section that was done using a thin lay. So it was a thin asphalt overlay, and we used a micro mill. It improved the ride drastically and helped extend that pavement life. And in the subsequent years, we see really good performance from that section. And there's various options for pavement preservations for high and low traffic. And so therefore, that's extending the service life to our roadways for the taxpayers. So this example just underscores, you know, what timely maintenance really does to it. ASR targets in this bill create kind of a framework as well as ways we can preserve our roadways by tracking the mile year added relative to the total system. We gave a picture whether we're keeping up, falling behind, maintaining our pavement assets. So this is not just a metric, it's really a mirror to hold for performance. So by aligning some of these statutory targets with existing framework, we bring clarity to this overall process. So each year we delay payment preservation. It can cost dramatically to taxpayers. I even read some information, just the cost of letting a road fail in general could be up to 5 times higher than just doing simple resurfacing and keeping up with pavement preservation. And the asphalt industry continues to innovate each year, from warm mix asphalt to sustainable recycling to stretch our dollar. In closing, this bill is not about bureaucracy. It's about benchmarking progress. It's about giving Minnesotans a transportation system that holds up under pressure and underpins the economy. We urge you to support this forward-thinking legislation, and we thank Chair Cagle for authorizing this important bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for that testimony. We appreciate that insight. Mr. Labo, welcome back to the committee. If I didn't crucify your name.
Close enough.
Well, welcome, and please proceed. Identify yourself and then proceed for the testimony.
All right. Thank you, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Dan Labo, and I'm the executive director for the Concrete Paving Association Minnesota, which represents the contractors and material suppliers that produce the vast majority of concrete pavements in our state. Like Brandon, I'm also a PE, and like Glenn, I'm a former MnDOTer of 10 years in the construction end. And really, I just wanted to thank you for allowing me to testify today at today's hearing. I'm here in support of House File 1521, which sets asset sustainability ratio targets for our state highways. And special compliments to Co-Chair Cagle for getting asphalt together at the same side of the table, and we actually agree. So the asphalt sustainability ratio, again, it really calculates the replacement rate of pavement lost annually on our highway system on the whole. The value of one represents the system is neither improving nor deteriorating. Further, the best practice is to ensure that this ratio remains between 1.1 and 0.9 while maintaining that average of one. It's a really good ratio to show you really a quick system report of how you're investing. And the most recently available MnDOT STIP, or the State Transportation Improvement Program, and the Capital Highway Improvement Plan show that this ASR value is 0.5 over the next 10 years. So what this means is our highway system loses roughly 2 years of life for every 1 year of life purchased, which represents a crisis in the making. Further, this implies that we would need to spend roughly double on a status quo mix of fixes to resolve the issue. So the cost of implementing this would require about $1 billion a year of new annual funding, which really isn't sustainable. So what I believe this bill would do is ensure that our pavements are once again prioritized, and these targets could easily be met with existing funding levels by adopting several simple strategies, which includes, as Brandon mentioned, implementing MnRoad research findings to build higher quality pavements of all types, optimize pavement and non-pavement designs to maximize cost effectiveness, increasing the average design life of all pavements constructed, reduce the amount of highway funds spent on items that are wants and not needs, such as ornamental features and costly architectural treatments. I'd also say we should engage with industry partners to help identify areas of optimization. And finally, the targets set forth in this bill are very conservative, but represent a dramatic improvement over the current status quo. And the minimum requirements of this bill remain insufficient to ensure that our pavements receive adequate investment, but I think they represent a very good start. Thank you, and I'm available for any follow-up.
Thank you. I appreciate the closing comments on that. I did notice on line 1.16, hearing the testimony that we want a ratio of at least one or greater, but we're setting some benchmarks to move towards that. But it does say not less than 0.85. You'd reference 0.90 as well. And so at least we have the not less than in there. But obviously, I think the ultimate objective would to be at least a one ratio. We have Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Cagle, for bringing this forward to be able to talk about today. So I am trying to understand two pieces of like kind of the scoping of this, and maybe I think your testifiers can help me understand this. Is this
calculation made on just the new projects that are constructed each year, or is this an evaluation of the entire system each year?
Who would like to address Representative Jones' question? We'll have Mr. Engstrom come back and... Just state your name real quick and then proceed with a response.
I'm with Arma, Minnesota. So, good question. It's a system-wide measure. So you would total up all the projects that are built over a year and how much life each project adds to the system. Does that make sense?
And so then would Mr.
Representative Jones, and I think it would be in reference to line 1.11 and 1.12, but please follow up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Engstrom. So that kind of gets to my question. So, but is it also assessing the existing system plus the new projects in a year?
Just the new projects. So,
okay.
Please proceed.
So, sorry. So each year, the system of about 14,000 lane mile, whatever it is, loses a year, right? So if you build a project, let's say it's 10 miles, and the average life, predicted life of that is 10 years, so that would be 10 times 10, so 100 mile years you'd add to the system. So you'd add up all the projects that you're doing. If you have another project that's 20-year life and lasts, and it's 10 miles long, that would be 200 mile years you'd add. So you add up all the gains, and the rest of the projects, the rest of the system still gets a year old, okay? Does that make sense? It gets a little complicated. It's like a bank account almost. You're going to lose every year. You know you're going to lose X, meaning the total system's going to get 1 year older. How much are we adding in with all these individual projects to keep up?
Representative Jones?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Engstrom. So it is just assessing the new projects collectively every year. Okay, so and I see how that would be additive. And I think you addressed my other question around lane miles. Okay, so that thank you very much for that. I had one more question around when we are talking about pavement, is that applying to pavement for all modes? So like bike trails, sidewalks, things like that.
Mr. Engstrom?
It's just the highway system.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, and then I think we'll probably wrap up.
Thank you. So does every highway have a current status then that they're in, that the 20-year, this highway is a 20-year and they're in year 17 on this? Is everything ranked overall? And also to piggyback on that, do you actually look at like a the not just the years that you've set out when you first redid the highway or built it, but do you actually look at the pavement quality? Is there an index where we're looking at the actual quality of the pavement? So thank you.
Mr. Engstrom?
So another really good question. So MnDOT has a very advanced pavement management system where every year vans go out and they measure the roughness of the road and they also take continuous videos of the road. And you can get how much it's cracked or how much it's rutted and the ride, like I previously said. So that's kept for every section of road across the whole state. And those numbers are plotted so you can see the deterioration of each one of the road segments. And then the roads that are eventually selected are obviously the ones that are in rough shape, poor condition, or approximately that. And there's various measures that are done to compute that. MnDOT does a wonderful job of doing that. Again, it's my old office. Great people that collect that data. And in fact, I was on the MnDOT site this morning looking at the website, and they have an annual report, and you can see exactly what the numbers are across the system. And they even divide it up district by district.
Thank you. That is very helpful information, and I was aware of the little van that drives around, and it was kind of surprised me how thorough they actually are monitoring that stuff. Representative Anderson, did you have a follow-up?
Just a confirmation. So when I look at the number and it's 0.85 or 0.95, does that mean that even in the next year, let's say it's 0.85, we're actually going negative still? Because it would be one that would be get us above one, would start to get us ahead of the game. Is that my understanding? Thank you.
Mr. Engstrom?
Yes, that's true. We tried to pick the targets to be reasonable because, again, MnDOT is pulled left and right to spend the money on a variety of things. But at the same time, we felt that they were targets that needed to be set based upon what happens with funding.
Thank you. Are you good? I know that the department is, as usual, in the audience. Is there any comments? Anything you want to say on the record? I see them not shaking their heads, but thanks for being here anyways. With that, we will, Chair Cagle, you can close your bill and just move it to be laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I think this is really a great way of kind of figuring out where we are with our assets and also making sure that we're trying to catch up when it comes to road quality and things along those lines. So thank you. I will renew my motion that 1521 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. 1521 is laid over. And just as of note, House File 423, Representative Sexton was removed from the agenda. I believe there was some agreement that his issue was resolved, so appreciate that. And with members, we will be adjourned. Representative or Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to, you know, we got our budget targets over the weekend, so that's really exciting. And really hoping that we can start to make progress on this bill. And so just hoping that we can really work together and get a really good budget for our transportation and for the people of Minnesota. So thanks.
Thank you. With that, we are working on the bill. And we will stay posted for future meetings. This meeting is adjourned.